So I had to find a way to change the story I was telling myself about being tired. And I always talk about this, like change the story that you tell yourself. You've got to play tricks with your mind because mind running is all mental. The minute you can convince yourself and change your story, change your outlook, change the way you think about something, that's when again you can achieve it. You can achieve anything, and you almost become, you don't become dangerous, but I like to say you become dangerous where you can do anything that you put your mind to at that point.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Sierra Carter. Sierra is a runner, a personal trainer, a health coach, and a podcaster. Her podcast is called Run, Thrive, Survive, where she talks about running, psychology, and mindset. We met at the podcast movement, and we spent a lot of time talking about running and mindset. And I was a guest on her show last week. She is a great host. She's also a great guest, and we had a lot of fun talking about running and mindset. But before I get to my conversation with Sierra, I want to remind you about the new message board here at ultramindsetpodcast.run. This is the place where the show notes are, and now you can also go there and leave a voice message. So you might be saying, well, I don't really have anything to say. Well, I've got the answer for you. I would like to hear your running stories. We're going to have various topics. This time, the first topic, something near and dear to all of our heart, is I would like to hear what is your best poop story. Where is the craziest place that you've been out on a run and had to poop? We've all been there. I know it. I've got my own, but this is my podcast, so I want to hear from you. I want to hear your poop stories. And so if you, what will happen is I will put these stories, the best stories, and we'll have different topics as well. But for now, we'll start with the poop stories. I want to put those best stories at the end of the episodes. So just as a way to kind of have fun and share our stories. And so you're probably out for a run or maybe driving around right now. So just make a mental note to visit ultramindsetpodcast.run. Click on the comment link and give me your best poop story. Okay, that settles that. We'll be saying more about that as time goes on. So most of us hate running on a treadmill. For me, it's hard. I can't do it, in fact. And a lot of runners call it the treadmill. But my guest this week, Sierra Carter, she became a runner because of a treadmill, and she says it happened by accident. She has a lot of other great stories to tell. So let's see what we can get into in this episode. Here is my conversation with Sierra Carter. Hey, Sierra, welcome to the show. I'm really glad to have you.
Hi, Eric. I'm super happy to be here. I'm actually really excited to be here today talking to you.
And me too. And for those who are wondering, Sierra is a podcaster, a fellow podcaster, and we met at Podcast Movement. So I'm excited to see where our conversation will go. And this is called Trail Talk, and it's like a virtual trail run. So like if we were going to run a trail together. And so usually in getting acquainted, the question I ask people is, hey, how did you get started as a runner? And tell a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, no, I would love to. So first I want to say thank you for having me on your podcast. This is actually the first podcast I've done that's not been mine. So it's kind of cool to be on the other side of the mic right now. I love it. But I'm a runner. I have a podcast called Run, Thrive, Survive. And we pretty much link how we can help our mental health through means like running and fitness and just, you know, everything like that. But how I got into running was kind of a wrapped around story. And if you'd asked me even like 7 years ago, I would probably laugh in your face if you told me I was going to be running marathons or even be a runner. I was that girl in PE who hated running. I despised the mile run. I was such a sporty person. I wasn't ever into soccer. I think that was the only sport I just couldn't stand because it had a lot of running in it. But I would do, I know, ironically, I love basketball. Basketball was my thing, and so was softball. But man, if you asked me to go run that mile, it just wasn't going to happen. I always had PE first period too. So of course, a middle school or high school girl, I'd always get up, do my hair and makeup, be all cute and pretty for the day. And then you'd throw me in this PE class where I would be sweaty and gross and my hair would be ruined and so would my makeup. And I could usually get around that in most of the sports. I would pretend to play the sport because I was going to have basketball practice that afternoon. But I would sleep through the mile run. It got so bad where one time my PE teacher was even called my mom and said, "Hey, I saw your daughter in the hallway today with her friends, but she wasn't at the mile run this morning." And of course, my mom responds, I know, because she knew I overslept on purpose. And I was lucky enough to be lean. My school was actually really lenient. We had an open campus. You were kind of on and off as you wanted to. It was almost like a college campus where I was because I grew up in a small town. Everybody knew each other. And it was just one of those things. So I always had to go sit at the gym to remake up the whatever PE class I made. I mean, I thought I was going to get a B in PE in high school because I just didn't want to go. They always had running and I just hated it. They'd start with a quarter mile lap and I could barely run around that without just falling apart. But then I quit basketball because I had an injury, which took about 7 years for a chiropractor to pretty much fix in 10 minutes. Which
is, oh my goodness,
pathetically sad. But you know, I couldn't jump stop because I had shooting pain up my legs from a pinched nerve in my back. But I couldn't, so I had to quit basketball. And again, in high school, you worry about your image. I was so worried about gaining weight. That was my major worry. I wanted to make sure I was skinny and that girl in high school, which really I look back and laugh at because it means nothing. It really means nothing when you look back on it in high school. But my mom bought herself a treadmill. She never used that treadmill. I used the treadmill all the time. And I was so excited the first day that I ran a mile in like 18 minutes. It took me 18 minutes to run this mile. I did it like 3.5. And I was doing that little like light jog that was just kind of like you're barely getting through. I was dying. Yeah. I was dying on this 18-minute mile. And so you could say like I played sports, but I was definitely still out of shape. So I kind of picked that up and would run a mile every single weekend. And my dad was always the coach, my biggest fan, my biggest coach. And he would sit at the kitchen table while I ran this mile and just stomped on the treadmill. And he was saying, just one foot after another. He's always that person said like, oh, 20 sit-ups a day, you'll feel good, you'll feel better, you'll all these different things. And I just kind of took that into consideration thinking, okay, well, I'm going to do 1 mile every weekend. Well, that 1 mile turned into 2 miles every weekend, then 3 miles every weekend. And then it turned into like 1 mile a day, 3 miles on the weekend. And it just kind of kept growing from there. Now, unfortunately,
this is all on a treadmill.
This is all on a treadmill. I lived in New Mexico at the time. The hills over in New Mexico actually freaked me out. That's why I didn't want to run outside. I didn't want to run up and down the hills. I just wanted to stay flat on the treadmill. And then when I was about 16 years old, I moved here to Florida, to Flatland, Florida.
Yeah, there you got your running.
I got my wish. I got my wish. And for a little bit, I actually became severely anemic because of an eating disorder. And a lot of that actually had to do with my overtraining on running. But there was part of me that didn't ever want to give up my running because I loved it. It became a mental health and I was up to 5 miles a day. I think I was up to 7 miles a day. And then I had to start walking because I couldn't breathe when I ran with the eating disorder. And I was still on the treadmill. I hope everybody realizes it took me 3 years to step foot outside. I never wanted to run outside. I used to think people that ran outside were crazy. Now I think people that just run on treadmills are crazy.
I know. I'm that way. Yeah, my treadmill. I'm going to interject this because my treadmill story is we had a treadmill for a while and it was like back before I was really even considered a runner and we eventually got rid of it because we just didn't use it, and then So I become a runner, and at the time I was wearing shoes. And so I went to the shoe store, and they let you try out the shoes on a treadmill. They put me on the treadmill, and with these new pair of shoes, it was about 3 seconds, and they said, just go outside. Because I was so, I mean, I look like a buffalo trying to just, get out of quicksand, I think. I couldn't get the rhythm.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, seriously now, like after running outside, especially if you're on trails, and dirt trails, the treadmill is so boring. And I can see why people call it the dreadmill, because it is dreadful. It is one of those things where you just don't look forward to it. And I mean, I finally, once I kind of healed from the anemia, once I was able to run again, I ran on the treadmill for maybe 2 more weeks. And somebody was like, hey, you should do this 10 mile race with me. I thought they were insane. I hadn't even done a 5K outside because it was outside. I was so like just anti running outside. And I did this 10 mile race and I thought I was going to die, but it was the best thing I had ever done. And I just kept signing up for them. And I was like, I got to train outside. I got to do this. And it became something where I would run. I would see the sights. I would love running in new places. My favorite thing is running in all these new places that I go, where we met in Nashville, you know, where I go out to New Mexico now and see my parents, Colorado, everywhere. I just absolutely love running outside. And I think it's the best way to see the world. So it just, that's kind of how I got into running. So, you know, one thing led to another. I started with a 10 mile race. I shouldn't have. I should have done like a 10K, but then I did a half marathon and I kept coming in first in my age group in these. I was thinking, oh, this is cool. I'm going to keep doing this. Yeah. And I did a marathon, and then, I mean, just like one thing led to another, and now I'm addicted and I can't not run outside. It's just weird to run on a treadmill. So even when it's like a hurricane coming, I will be outside.
So yeah, that's kind of a trail runner attitude. I know. Like, just, so when you ran on a treadmill, what did you do? I mean, what did you do for, you know, keeping your mind engaged? Because I know a lot of people who don't have the stimulus of running outside, you know, running on a treadmill, and I know people who read books while they're running on a treadmill. And so did you ever do anything like that?
Yes. So I will say yes to that when I was running a little bit slower. And also when I was walking, when I couldn't run because I was not in good health, I would actually bring my textbooks, bring my study materials, and I would just push it, put it like right up on the screen of the treadmill, and I would just go for it. And I probably was on the treadmill for about an hour a day. That was probably, I would never go over an hour, but it was probably about an hour a day. And I would just have my material right there and I'd study or I'd read. Now, once I started running a little bit faster and I got to about 7 miles in an hour, if I could have chosen a different career path, if I had talent, I would be a singer. Taylor Swift is my favorite singer. I conduct concerts in my head. I would lose myself with music. I would just play songs over again. And it's like I'm playing these music videos, conducting a concert in my head. And I would just kind of lose myself in the music. And the hour would go by pretty quickly. Now, of course, there's always those days where it seems like the hour lasts for 10 years. And we can't escape those, but those make us tougher.
Right. So do you listen to music outside when you run?
Absolutely. I love listening to music, but I do there on my longer runs. It's all podcasts. I love listening to podcasts. Hint, hint, okay. Listen to this podcast while you're running.
Yeah. And I think the people who listen, a lot of them are runners. And so I think there's a lot of runners who will hear this as they're running. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hope so. Especially if they're out in the trails.
Yeah. Yeah. And they will be thinking, oh man, I'm glad I'm not on a treadmill. So in Florida, I know a lot of people will run on treadmills just because of the heat down there. In the summertime, it's just blazing. We've had some just recently in Kansas. I mean, in fact, today, the heat index is supposed to be 110 or 115 or something like that.
But, oh my gosh!
So yeah, it was somewhere around there yesterday, and I went out and ran a little bit, and so got a little taste of what you guys get in Florida.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, no, we like in Florida, the roads are probably the most crowded with runners at 5 a.m. because we can't really escape the heat itself. It's still like 80, 90 degrees here at 5 a.m. It's not that the sun goes down and it cools off. No, it stays a sauna, but you don't have the sun as an extra factor. I mean, the other day I ran 24 miles because I'm training for a marathon, and it was, I think it was 5 a.m. It was 86 degrees, felt like 94, and it had 97% humidity. I was running through a sauna at 5 a.m. It didn't get any better. That entire run.
So how do you breathe in that kind of, I mean, I think this morning, you know, here in Kansas City, I think that it was around 80 some degrees. I mean, this is unusual. I mean, it's not unusual. We get this every summer, but it doesn't last as long as it is in Florida. So it's like 80 degrees and humidity was high. You know, I don't even pay any attention, but it was just, but I could breathe. I know when the humidity gets even, I can tell when the humidity is high because I have a hard time breathing in that. It's just, so how do you breathe when you do that?
Yeah. Sometimes I joke, it's like I have to grow gills to run here in Florida because you're just breathing in water in the air. Humidity on its own is its own beast because there's not a huge way you can train for the humidity. And I say that because if you're in altitude, that altitude doesn't fluctuate day to day. There's not one day where it's a lot drier or like less altitude and next day where it's more altitude. You have a constant variable that you can train in, and you can train your body to understand how to feel in it. With humidity, it literally can be 97, 98, 100% humidity one day, and the next day we can drop down to 66. So you feel it that next day, it's 66, and you can breathe like just any other day. Now at the same time, you're not training your body to understand humidity for the next day when it's back to 98%. So it's one of those things that I've really struggled with, but I've had to just learn, I just have to slow down. I sometimes have to take deeper breaths. I'll see it. I mean, it's a lot more shallow. My breathing's a lot more shallow when I'm running in this humidity. I have to slow down. My pace suffers immensely, but at the same time, I don't stop. I don't want to stop because I do want my body to understand what this feels like. You feel sluggish. You feel dense. I mean, it's a whole different feeling when you're running in the humidity. And I think running in high altitude is actually a lot easier than running in this humidity sometimes.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been at altitude, but I know whenever we get the humidity, I'm just like, oh, it's just, and this year, I mean, we talk in Kansas cause we have, you know, have seasons. There's discussions among trail runners. Are you team winter or team summer? And there are people here who love the heat and are out there running it. And I can adapt to both, but I'm pretty much solid on team winter. I would go for the cold. I'd go for the cold over the heat and humidity.
Yeah. Well, you know, in our winters here in Florida, they're so beautiful. The mornings are like 50, 60 degrees. I think it's perfect running weather. For some people,
that's amazing temperature to run in. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the afternoons, you know, we get up to like 70 degrees, but it's like maybe your spring on a 70 degree day. It's like low humidity. It's just such a beautiful time. But man, our summers are just awful. This year has been terrible. And I'm not sure if it's because I've been marathon training through it, literally out every day for like a couple hours at a time in this humidity, or it's just because it's actually worse this year. We feel like it gets worse every year, but last year was beautiful all the way to like July. So maybe we got spoiled last year and this year just sucks.
Well, and this has been an unusually wet year for us. And so, you know, we had mud to contend with. And then I knew as soon as it gets hot, we're going to have high humidity. And so it's been that way. So, but now it's just what it is what it is. And that's part of running outside. I mean, you take the weather with what gives you. You talked about running, you know, running in hurricane. I mean, that's, I ran one day this year and the rain was coming sideways. And so, in fact, they closed the park down.
I love it.
shortly after because it rained so much. The roads were flooded. This sheriff came along and asked everyone to leave the park because the park.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We've had a few times like that here in Florida. I'm not sure. Okay. So a couple 2017. So about 5 years ago, was that 5 years ago? That was a little while ago, 3 or 4 years ago. There was a hurricane that took over the entire state of Florida. It was called Hurricane Irma. Some people know it, and probably recognize it because it was engulfing the entire state of Florida. And I had evacuated and came back. Now, I just left because my parents live in New Mexico. I hopped on the plane and I was lucky enough to leave. And I was like, I'm out of here. I'm not going to stay here for this hurricane. Because we're more scared of our air conditioner not working than we are of the hurricane. If you live here in Florida. It's not a fun time. I'm telling you. Yeah. If we lose power in that air conditioning.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Oh, well, but I
and then you've got your house like boarded up as well. So
yeah. So, oh, it's horrible.
It would be being inside of an oven, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's all around bad. And I came back actually a couple days after it passed through because I had to come back to work because they don't let you off of work very long here. I went running for a run and all the streetlights were down. So usually I have some streetlights and a little bit of light to run on at 5 a.m. This time it was like pitch black. I actually remember tripping over a tree, hitting a curb and just skidding across the sidewalk. And that was my hurricane running story. I just wiped out and I think I still have the scars on my knee to this day.
So yeah, and you're still marathon running, so you don't have the headlights and everything that the ultra marathon runners usually have those equipment.
No, I don't have that. I should have that, but I don't.
Yeah, well, and if you're running on streets at 5 a.m., the streetlights will be fine. So do you ever get off and run trails as well?
Yeah, so usually when I run trails, it's when I'm traveling, unfortunately. I wish there were more trails around here to run, but there's nothing. I live more towards the beach, I live on the beach here in Florida. So around me is either the beach, which I run on sometimes when it's flat. It really sucks when it's not flat. And it's soft sand. That really sucks. And I've heard a lot of people snapping their Achilles tendon on that, and that freaks me out, so I don't do that. I'd rather just live my whole life not doing that. But there's other, like, if you go over the bridge onto the mainland of Florida, because I'm on Little Barrier Islands, they have some trails, but I'm telling you, if you get on these trails, it doesn't matter how fast you're running, bugs will eat you alive. So I really try to avoid the trails here. Now, when I go out to like New Mexico or Colorado, I'm only running on trails. There's no way I'm running on asphalt. I am finding every single trail. I love it. I think flying down a trail with roots and dodging rocks and jumping kind of like on the rocks and going up the hills, down the hills, I think that's the most exciting, just adrenaline rush ever. And some people think I'm crazy when I say that, thinking, oh, okay, that's just weird. Like, you can't just walk and hike, like walk it like a regular hike. No, it is the best feeling when you're flying down the trees, you're flying, jumping on the rocks. It is just an awesome feeling.
Yeah, and I see people who do that, and I admire that. Right. I look at that guy. I go a little bit slower, but yeah, it's still that same idea is the concentration that it takes to do that. It's like your mind, you have to be fully present and in the moment. You really can't have any distractions, because if you do, you're going to hurt.
Well, I think honestly, kind of talking about the mindset here, when I run trails, I actually don't listen to music. And I don't listen to music because I think it's like one of the biggest mindset, like, just, it really helps me get in the zone. So I learn how to really get into the zone when I'm trail running. And it also helps me become not only a better runner, but like understand who I am without music blasting in my ear. Because when music's playing, I think I'm everybody else. But when I'm just running on trails, listening to my feet hit the ground and just kind of listening to the nature around me that you can hear, there's a lot to be said. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about how you feel about things. You learn a lot on this run. And I love doing it without music, because music, when you're in nature, is just, it's almost a waste in my opinion. It's kind of the same. Like if I walk on the beach, I don't listen to music. I like to hear the waves. Now, if I'm running down the street here, I don't want to hear the cars. I don't want to hear people screaming in their driveways. I just want to listen to my music. But in nature, it's, I think it's so much better to listen to the sounds of nature than to listen to music.
So when you, when you're running, and you, you talked about getting in the zone, is there, you know, is there a certain process you use to do that? Or does just being in nature get you there? I mean, is that something you're, you have to be intentional about, or does it just happen?
It's so a little bit intentional. Yes. At first. So at first I'm going to say the first mile, usually I'm never in the zone. It's one of those things where the first mile, and if you run more than like, you know, if you've run a 10K, if you've run, is it an 8K, 10K, you know, anything farther than a 10K, 15K, that's what I'm thinking about, 9 miles, or even a half marathon, you know that the first mile really doesn't say anything about your run. It honestly takes me about 1 to 2 miles to even warm up anymore. I mean, I do a warm up beforehand, but it takes me 1 or 2 miles to get in the zone. Mm-hmm. And it kind of takes a little bit of, I have to forget that I'm running. I have to not count like my breathing. I have to not count my steps. I have to not think about how far I have to go. It takes me a little bit, little while. Now, when I'm here and I'm listening to music, it takes a few songs. And it's honestly just kind of finding that right song to almost tap into the rhythm of the day. Now, if I'm on a trail, it kind of takes me getting just distracted by nature. But again, that first mile to half a mile to a mile, it's not easy. And anybody that stops at a half a mile or a mile, just try getting past that first mile and you're going to realize that running's actually a wonderful thing. But it's that first mile that's a killer. I want to quit every time for the first mile. You don't want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and so I'm trying to get to the point where I can get into a rhythm. And it's like, you talked about the zone. I feel like there's a flow to your body and I'm trying to get there faster because for quite a long time, it's taken me about 3 miles. And so if I go on a 3 mile run, I'm just kind of getting going and then it's like, oh, it's done. But, so I've been working on trying to find ways to really kind of ground my body into what we're doing, you know. It takes more than a mile, but this morning I came close. I was, you know, like a mile and a half and I could start feel that kind of flow and it's like, oh yeah, this is.
I know. Seriously, it takes us a long time. The more you run, I had somebody ask me, they're like, at what point do I feel that runner's high? And I told them it's not till like 5 or 6 miles do I kind of feel like I found a really good rhythm. And it's a little bit after that that I actually feel that runner's high. It takes a while. And the first thing they said, oh, it doesn't happen in like the first mile. I was like, no, not for me. Maybe for somebody else, but it definitely takes a little bit while because it's like you have to. I think of running as a roller coaster. I think you actually told me this analogy. It's like when your highest highs and your low. It's just like one of those things. Like it's literally a roller coaster, and I've always seen it in my running where I feel great. And then I'm going to feel like I want to give up. And then that's how I know I hit the runner's high where I feel like I'm unstoppable. But then again, I know that tired is going to hit me. I think one of the best things I've ever heard from somebody that loves to run who said it, and I can't remember who said it, and I love to tell and quote them, fall in love with being tired. Once you can just fall in love with being tired, you almost become unstoppable. And I've always thought about that. When I was trying to qualify for Boston a few years back, I kept thinking about fall in love with being tired because being tired is what we get scared of and it's what we get intimidated by and it's what really stops a lot of us running. Once you're comfortable with it, once you're got over that feeling of being uncomfortable, tired, you're pretty much unstoppable in any race, anywhere you run, and anything you do. So I always like that. Fall in love with being tired.
So what was your process? How did you get to that point where you were able to do that?
So I really used that, just the mental mind game of the more times I say it, the more I'm actually going to trick my mind into believing it. So I wanted to get to that point where I looked forward to being tired. So I did a lot of intervals where I could identify what it felt like to just be drained. And if you've ever done intervals and you've just given it your all, you know that the minute that it says walk or, you know, like slow it down, come to a lower pace, you want to just stop and lay on the ground and just watch the clouds for the rest of the remainder of the time. Mm-hmm. That's the point where I decided, I love this. You know, I would tell myself, at first I didn't believe it because I didn't feel it. I just kept telling myself, I love this feeling. This is what I want. It's almost like looking for that adrenaline rush. So I had to find a way to change the story I was telling myself about being tired. And I always talk about this, like change the story that you tell yourself. You've got to play tricks with your mind because mind running is all mental. And you know this especially because we talked about, I hit my thing. We talked about this a little bit where running is just all mental. And the minute you can convince yourself and change your story, change your outlook, change the way you think about something, that's when, again, you can achieve anything. And you almost become, you don't become dangerous, but I like to say you become dangerous where you can do anything that you put your mind to at that point.
Right. Yeah. And I had people tell me, you know, I just can't imagine. And, you know, they probably say that to you. You know, I can't imagine running 25 miles or running a marathon.
Oh yeah.
And
all the time.
The thing that, you know, I wanted to say, I was polite and kind of just smiled and nodded, but the thing I wanted to say is, well, that's how you do it. You imagine it first. You look at, say, I think I can do that. And it starts in your imagination. And it's then training your mind to say, you know, to get to what you imagine. And that's the same in life. It's like any goal. That's part of what I think is, you know, why I say that, you know, that mindset is, you know, the mindset for running is the same mindset you need for, you know, for life.
Yes.
Because, you know, in life, you'll get to the point where you're tired and you'll get to the point where things aren't going well. And then you have to, unfortunately, some people say, you know, they make the choice to quit, you know, I talked to a guy just recently that came close to ending his life. But then, you know, he found running, and started running and was able to get himself turned around. But it's that way. You really, unless you take that drastic action, you know, you have to keep going. I mean, life goes on. But I know some, I know a lot of people who have made the decision and just that they did stop living. It was like their life didn't end, but they just kind of sat down and said, this is as far as I'm going. And I've seen that in trail races too. You know, you get the people who are just tired, and their mindset gives up, and they just kind of sit down and say, no, I'm not going any farther. And their body's capable, but they just don't.
No, it is so true. And I just want to say something that it was like a whole breakthrough the other day on my 24 mile run. So I did 24 miles, I think it was Monday. And I mean, it was hot here. I woke up late. I didn't get running until like 6:30. It's six, like the sun rises at 6:50. So I mean, I had 20 minutes of no sun and the rest was hot heat in the sun. And there was such a big part of me that was just so ready to give up and just say, I'll make up these miles later. But then there was something else where, so the past year in the pandemic, I feel like I've fallen apart and like reborn again. Beginning of 2020, my best friend and you'll love this as a mindset coach. I mean, her and I were the most negative people we could possibly get, but we found like humor. It was like dark humor and how bad things were going for both her and I. And this was before the pandemic was a thing. And her and I would have this joke, it can't get worse, can it? And every single week, this was starting in like January, every single week we'd come back with, oh God, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And it would just become this joke to the point where I got a phone call. She was complaining. I can't remember what was going on with her. But then I was like, okay, well, it can't get worse. And I got a phone call that my dream job that I had, they were discontinuing our contracts because they wanted to focus effort somewhere else. And I was sitting with her at Starbucks of all places. And I would turn to her. I was like, it can't get any worse, can it? I mean, it was just humorous how horrible, and things were just falling apart after another. And then on top of it, you know, like her and I both went some really nasty breakups, really horrible breakups. And I lost the job and my schooling wasn't going right because I was finishing up my master's program. Her and I couldn't land these internships. I mean, there was just left and right. It was like the whole world was on fire. And then that first week, which I don't think I have to explain what happened in that first or second week of March. We all remember it. We might all have PTSD from it. But the pandemic hit and they postponed Boston Marathon. Now, this Boston Marathon was holding me together. I was so excited to run the Boston Marathon. I was like how many weeks out were we? I think we were like 6 weeks out in training when they postponed it. And when they postponed it, I just almost like felt my world shatter thinking, oh my God, everything is just like falling apart. And I thought my mom was joking when she almost told me the news before I figured it out. And I was just lost. And I had a lot of I almost had no motivation to run because that one thing I was striving for was just kind of gone. And everything else that I was working towards gone. I was going to graduate. I was on all these honors programs. I was like, this was going to be the best part of my life. And I remember thinking, this is the most exciting part of my life. And it was all canceled due to COVID. So in the back of my mind, this is like one of the biggest roadblocks that I've had, and I still struggle with it, but kind of moving back into my 24 miles on Monday, I saw that I finally broke it. But for the longest time, I was kept thinking, it is so pointless to work for something so hard because there's something like COVID that can take it all away. I mean, this was my final graduation. This was like everything I've ever worked so hard for. My 4.0 is like 4.0 student almost my entire life. You know, everything that I'd worked so hard for and ever known, shattered in like 24 hours. And so I went into depression.
And nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing I could do about it. I mean, the relationship I thought I would be in for like the rest of my life shattered in front of my eyes. I just woke up one day and realized how bad it was. And it was just like everything at once. And I wasn't like, you couldn't physically tell I was upset because I think I was so numb and in shock. I was walking around like everybody else thinking, oh God, is this real or is this just a really bad dream? I can't tell anymore. You know, you're just kind of like going through the motions, trying to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where I was. And then when May came and they canceled the Boston Marathon and pretty much told everybody that they weren't going to honor their times for next year, I didn't realize that.
So you had to requalify.
No. So I'm going to have to requalify. That's why I'm working so hard towards this marathon now. So what they did, I guess they honored us, but not in the way most marathons did. So Boston actually said everybody who has qualified within COVID within the past 2 years can send in their times. And then they cut the field size down by 10,000 people. People had to get, I think it was like a 7-minute cutoff past your qualification time. That's insane. I think the largest one that they've had was 4 miles or 4 minutes, and they had to move the time back. So I didn't have the 7-minute cutoff. So for a lot of people, and it broke my heart because I know some people who were battling cancer and wanted to run this, and this might be like their time frame. Chance. Like mm-hmm. there's time yeah. frames for mm-hmm. a lot of people, right? And they didn't get in because of the 7-minute cutoff. And it's just a bummer because all the other marathons let everybody that was supposed to run in 2020 in first, and then they filled slots. They didn't do that in Boston. And it's such a bummer. But that broke me. And there was just something so mind-shattering where I thought, you know what, I'm not gonna do anything long-term anymore because I don't know. We still don't know about this pandemic thing. Things are like, people are talking about shutdowns and whatnot. And it's just like, there's so much negativity that you can handle. And there's so much like fear and so much like scare, like people getting scared that you just like, it just like shakes your head. And so I had this long time struggle. I didn't really want to run. I was just kind of rolling through the motions. I barely could get up in the morning. I wasn't motivated. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to try. I got the letter from Boston that, oh yeah, sorry, your time wasn't good enough. And I was like, of course it wasn't. Like, what a bummer. And I just kind of like slid down this really slippery slope. And during this last marathon training, I've started to really feel like I'm getting my life back together. And on Monday, the past year, I would have quit. I would have easily quit this run. But Monday, I was like, you know, this has to be the point where you show yourself that no matter how hard it gets, no matter how much it hurts, no matter, you know, how tired you get, no matter just like how hot you get, no matter how uncomfortable you are, you can slow down. You can definitely slow down. You can walk if you need to, but you cannot give up. You have to reach this 24 miles. And it just felt like something clicked in me. It just felt like this is the mindset I need, like talking to myself, I need you to have every single day, because there are days where you feel like you just want to run and hide in a cave. But then there are other days where you feel on top of the world. That's just like running. There's miles where you feel like you're going to run forever. And there's miles where you just hit that wall so hard, you're not sure if you can keep going. And so there is something to be said about on Monday, it finally clicked and it feels like finally found myself back together. And it took running. It took the outlet of running to help me understand that and put it towards my life.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So what is the race that you're doing to qualify for Boston?
Yeah, so it's called Chasing the Unicorn, and it's made specifically. Have you heard of it?
That's a great name. It's a great name for especially from the story that you just told, and you're doing the race called Chasing the Unicorn. I was like, that's great.
I'm telling you, this marathon, I felt like it had my name written all over it at this point. I was looking at another marathon the same weekend. So it's the weekend of, it's September 12th, I think. And I was looking at another marathon in that same state. So it's up in Pennsylvania and it's on the other side. So this one's out of Philadelphia. The other one I was looking at was in outside of Pittsburgh. I hope I have those two cities right. And I was so close to signing up for it. It was the Lake Erie Marathon. So, so, so close. And there, you know how there's something just doesn't feel completely right about the situation? Mm-hmm. That's how I felt about this marathon. There's just something I couldn't vision myself there. And I just couldn't see it happening. And then I started looking at that findmymarathon.com. And I found this one that said Chasing the Unicorn. And it's made specifically to be a Boston qualifier. I mean, it's in cool temperatures and it's only like 42 feet elevation with no hills. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I was like, this is perfect. The other one was about 400 feet elevation, which I don't think is really going to worry me, but this was 42. I was
which is a lot like Florida.
I still a little bit higher than Florida, but I mean, I'm going to be at my parents the week before and they're at 8,400 feet elevation. So now I'm training with, you know, dead heat here in Florida and the humidity, and I'm also going to get really high elevation. So hopefully all this training that I've been doing and chasing, I kind of meet myself in the middle with no humidity, low cool temperatures and low elevation. And hopefully I just feel like a superhero as I fly through this race. I just want to get to Boston. That's all I want to do.
Yeah. So Boston would be next year if you can qualify. I mean, that sounds like,
I'm really
hoping. It sounds like you're in the perfect position to be able to qualify, you know?
I know. Now it's just like, you know, got to make sure my stomach's okay that day. The last marathon I did was going so well. And then like mile 16, I mean, I was going to do like 3:18 marathon. Mile 16, it's like my stomach was like, oops, never mind. And it's just like I ate something, I don't know, but I got so sick where I was almost like dry heaving for the last 10 miles. Wow. I was like, this is awful. You know, and it was like just like that. So I got to watch out for that. Got to figure out what I did wrong there. I think I know. I shouldn't eat Chick-fil-A sauce with everything that I make in my life.
So I'm going by, it's been a long time since I ran a marathon and so I'm in the trail running community. And so we eat a lot from the very beginning and seeing some of the stuff and the people talk about marathons, it seems like some of them don't eat as much. So what kind of fueling do you do for just running a marathon?
Yeah. So a lot of people, I get this question a lot. I love this guy. The man that has coached me, and not like, he's not like my running coach, but he's helped me set up my training plan. He checks in with me all the time. He's run Boston 8 times. He's more excited for me to run Boston than I am. And I'm super excited. And his theory is eat whatever you want. Now, you and I both know that might not be the best way to go about it when you're running. Because there are things that screw up your stomach and there are things that really have no nutritional value that are going to help you. So I take it into kind of a eat what you want. I kind of don't worry about portion sizes. I worry about how I feel more than portion sizes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love portion sizes. I see them as guidelines and I like to run past those as well. I do eat probably a lot more than a normal person, but I stay away from fried foods. I do not like eating fried foods. It hurts my stomach to begin with, and it just makes you feel run down. And I've noticed if I ate fried foods the night before a run, I just feel gross. Mm-hmm. I really go off how I feel. I really try not to drink. Now, when I'm at social events, I'll have a drink here or there, but when I'm marathon training, I'm pretty strict about it. I don't like to drink. I'm not a big drinker really beforehand, but I really try no alcohol just to make sure I feel really good every single morning to run. And of course, I'm not a huge sweet eater either. I try to just honestly eat, like I think my go-to meal is steak, potatoes, which are like, you know, like cut potatoes that you baked in the oven, not mm-hmm. like baked potatoes, but you almost make them into your own French fries, mm-hmm. and broccoli. That is my favorite meal and I eat it almost all the time. I try to balance out, like, you know, a good steak with the same kind of like amount of potatoes. Now, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a dietitian. I could tell you the portion sizes or what the ratio that you need, but I know what works for me is when I have a good sized steak and lots of potatoes and some broccoli. And it honestly, and my Chick-fil-A sauce, and it mm-hmm. honestly works so well for me. I do have raviolis the night before a long run. I think the best thing for me up the week of going to a marathon is I start on Wednesday and I start eating pancakes every morning. I kind of stop my running. A lot of people like to run. I don't. I want to crave running. I want to get up to the start line and be like, I cannot wait to run because I haven't run in 4 days. Mm-hmm. That is my mentality when it comes to a marathon. But I start by eating pancakes and then I have some kind of like heavy carb meal at lunchtime, probably with rice. I try to stay on the good carb side, not a lot of bread, but potatoes are my thing. I really like potatoes. And at night, it's mostly ravioli, potatoes, anything like that. I really try to get in that 4 days before the marathon. And I found on when I qualified for Boston my first time, that was like honestly such a perfect combo because carbs aren't going to like screw up my stomach. It's a lot of the seasoning and the sauces that screw up my stomach. Mm-hmm. So carbs, they sit there and they just pump me energy that whole time while I'm running. And everything else is just kind of a bonus, like broccoli. I do love broccoli. Vegetables are awesome. And I'm not afraid of steak. I know a lot of people don't like eating meat. I love eating meat, especially after being anemic. I think meat is my favorite food, and I will eat a steak every single day if I could. Especially, I'm a weirdo. I eat a medium rare. Like I like to say, like I like my steak still bleeding a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think some people a little upset, but
it's more tender. It's more tender.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so juicy. So yeah. No, so when it comes to a lot of the nutrition, go off of how you feel. You know what makes you feel good. I know what makes me feel good. I wouldn't try too hard to stick to a plan, to a rigid plan, because if that plan's not making you feel good, it's not working for you.
So I guess do you eat during the time you're running?
Oh, no, I don't. Okay. So again, the guy that is coaching me, I would tell him, oh, I brought my gels. I brought my gummies on my run and this. And he's like, stop doing that. And I was like, why? And he's like, you need to like get your body up to the point where you can do 26 miles without having to rely on a source. He's like, because what if you drop that source and now you don't have it at mile 20 and you needed that kick? I was like, you know, that's kind of a good point. I do Gatorade. Gatorade and I don't have it with me. There's this other thing called Cure. C-U-R-E. And it's a hydration pack. And it's made from like Himalayan salt and coconut water and coconut milk or whatever.
Okay.
It tastes amazing. It's a great hydration. I do use those. Those are awesome. So if anything, I just use hydration packs. Now, if I were to go over 26 miles, like an ultra, mm-hmm. Yeah, you need gels, you need goos, you need anything that your body can get. But I think up to a marathon, once you train yourself to get there, I don't think it's super necessary.
So the stomach issues you had weren't from food that you ate on the run.
During the run.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because ultra runners, I mean, they have to. They're not only do they have to look at what they do before, but yeah, it's what can you eat while you're out there, and stomach issues sideline a lot. They end races for a lot of ultra marathoners. I mean, that's probably just as common as physical injuries, because you show up and the food that you've been training with or the food that you're used to, all of a sudden your stomach says, no, we're not doing that today. And so kind of like
oh,
you
it's
with
such
the,
a dangerous position.
With the Chick-fil-A sauce is like your stomach says, no, you know, we shouldn't have done Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it was the combination of Chick-fil-A sauce the night before. And I took, I'm not a huge person in the caffeine, but I usually never drink caffeine. I like to use it as my superpower when I'm doing a race, because if you don't have a lot of caffeine, when you take caffeine, it feels like you're bouncing off the walls. Mm-hmm. So I took caffeine pills. I didn't take coffee. I wasn't drinking it. They have like these C4 pills and they're caffeine. It's just like pure caffeine. I took like 4 of them before this marathon. And I think honestly, that combo with what I ate was what really hit me. Yeah. Wow. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I knew I shouldn't have done that. I questioned it before I did it because I was really tired that morning, and mm-hmm. it worked for 16 miles and then it didn't. So, I haven't taken those.
Yeah. That kind of goes to, you know, to prove what is said, don't try anything new on race day. And
oopsies.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had that. I had a new, pair, you know, brand new pair of shoes when I went to run a race, and I said I would not do that again.
No, nope. We've all done that mistake, though. I will admit to that one. We've all done that.
Yeah, everyone learns from that, and sometimes we have to learn that lesson, you know, again with, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I can, yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Yeah, that's what we always tell ourselves.
Maybe for like a 5K or a 10K, like something like super fast and short. But if you're running for more than like an hour, oh, just don't try anything new.
Right.
Just don't. Yeah. Just save yourself.
Yeah. Well, Serena, tell me a little bit about your podcast. I know you're kind of in the mindset as well. And so talk to me a little bit about, and you... I know you get into the psychology as in that. So tell me about your podcast and the kind of people that you're reaching and the stories you tell.
So a big thing about my podcast is like my background. I wanted to be a psychologist, especially after I had like an eating disorder, and I struggled a lot with loneliness growing up. Kind of hence like how I got into a really bad relationship. I was scared to leave it. I didn't want to leave, and I just stayed into it until I realized this is really bad and I need to get out before I pretty much needed to save myself. So I wanted to be a psychologist. Mental health has always been a huge like thing for me and to help other people with. I was going to say one quick statistic because I read it today and it just like broke my heart. Teen suicide is up higher than it's ever been. I actually had 3 people I knew in high school. I was in high school at the time. Commit suicide. So mental health always been a huge thing on my end, where I wanted to make sure people were okay. And I've been a happy person, and there's a lot more to it, but there's a lot of instances where it's just like it really takes one person reaching out to somebody else to really help them. Now, I found improving mental health through my running improved my mental health more than anything could. And so did the gym. So did yoga. So did all these different things I was doing. So I'm working on my board certified behavior analysis certification and going to school for that and everything. And that would pretty much be able to allow me to help people in the mental health realm legally. I can't diagnose people, but legally.
you're doing it illegally.
No, I'm not doing it illegally. I'm doing it through a means.
I know. I know. It's just the way that came out. It's like, I couldn't let that go. It's like, yeah.
No, I'm still doing it legally, but yeah. It's more, I would be able to do and help people more. Like I'd almost be able to be counsel them, which is what I've always wanted to do. But I always wanted to do it through a means of exercise. I want to get them walking. I want to get them working out so you feel better about yourself. Like I've seen a number one huge problem is when you get depressed, when you get anxious, what do? You hide in this cave.
And you stop doing anything.
Pretend that the world. You start, you sit down like we talked at the beginning of this podcast. You sit down and you just kind of give up. And it's such a heartbreaking thing to watch somebody, especially people you see with so much potential. So with my podcast, not only do I have a lot of awesome runners on who talk about their races that they've done, but they talk about their mindset in these races. They talk about how running has really helped them, like get out of some really horrible situations and how it's like helped them overcome cancer, get through radiation or therapy. I mean, running is such a strong, powerful thing. And of course, I mean, you can weightlift, you can do yoga, things like that also help. I just focus on running because I love running and it helped me. But we also focus on, you know, like behaviors. I like to call it habit hacking, where your environment actually controls you more than you think it does. If you can change your environment, you can change almost anything that you do, and you can change your mindset if you can change your environment too. Some people, they're awesome. You know this, they can change their mindset pretty easily. Sometimes it literally takes redoing your entire room to change who you are. Mm-hmm. A lot of women, we will see this all the time. This is my favorite one to point out as an example. Women, what is like almost the first thing, or what is the key, like the key giveaway that you think somebody just went through a breakup? It's usually because the woman goes and does their hair completely differently. Like I know so many girls who have gone through breakups and they go and like chop their hair off and they're like, I just needed a fresh start. It is literally small things like that that could lead to such big changes. I went through a breakup last year. I've never done anything with my hair. If you look at pictures, it still kind of looks the same. I actually went out and got it highlighted and like done a little bit differently because I was like, I just can't do this anymore. I can't be that same person. And it makes you feel like a different person. So again, it's, you need to learn how to control your environment so it doesn't control you. And that's what I talk about a lot in the podcast. Like, what are things that we can do to make ourselves happier human beings? Changing the environment, changing how you look at things. I had an athletic psychotherapist on. She was awesome. And that's pretty much overcoming a lot of the obstacles about, you know, what we have in our running and what we have in any sport that we do. I had a chiropractor on. I'm trying to show people, you know, like people either believe in chiropractic or they don't. And it's such a weird thing because it technically is a medical thing, but there are people that are like, I don't believe in that. And my favorite thing that he said was, okay, well, I'm not a unicorn. You don't have to believe in me, but you know, it's just things like that. So like what things can you change in your life to really make big changes later on down the road? That's what I talk about in the podcast. It's a lot of fun. Well,
and you've had personal experience with chiropractic that you said you had an issue in your back that the medical profession probably gave you drugs to help you your muscles relax, and the chiropractor probably got and found out your legs weren't in, you had legs were not aligned and snapped your hips and got you back.
Yeah.
And I'm just guessing because I go to a chiropractor too. So
yeah, no, it's honestly like the short story for that one is when I was 17, when I was in basketball, they pretty much told me I'm 17 year old surgery to fix these pinched nerves in my back. And I was like, I'm horrified of doctors. So I was like, nah, I'm not doing surgery. So I'll just quit basketball. And what did it take? Like, how old was I? 19, 20. About 4 or 5 years later, it took me 5 years later, I got in a car accident. I called my doctor and I was like, hey, I need like a follow-up to make sure like everything's okay on me. And she's like, no, you have to go back to where you went the night of the car accident. And I was like, I have to go follow up in the emergency room. And she's like, yeah, we don't do car accidents. I was like, who doesn't do a Okay. I, you know, it was just one of those things where I was just like, okay, whatever. I don't care. And that night I went to a networking event and the chiropractor was there talking about all these things. And I told him, I explained my story. I was like, I was in a car accident 2 days ago. That's my rental car outside. Can you help me out? Fixed my pinched nerves in my back within one session. Now, of course, he'll always tell you it takes a little bit longer for a lot of people to see results. Mm-hmm. That was fixed. I told him this problem was fixed within one session because my hips, one was higher than the other. What mm-hmm. did he do? He helped my atlas or whatever's up in my head here. My atlas, hips were fine, no pinched nerves in my back. And I was like, that took me 5 years to figure out and avoiding a surgery. And I can't believe it was that simple. I'm telling you, it's just small things that I wish somebody would have been like, you need to try this. Cause I was scared of chiropractors. Mm-hmm. I'm scared of them. The things that you hear, I was scared of that. I had to change my mindset about them and I gave him a chance and he like literally cured my life.
Yeah. I have not been to a chiropractor for quite a few years. And I had the same thing. Right? Although, you know, it's like chiropractic, my grandfather wanted to be a chiropractor. So, you know, we've kind of been,
I love it.
You know, my grandfather learned, I mean, he was never, you know, talk about legal, you know, he wasn't legal. And so, but he learned how to do, sorry, you were just taking a drink when I said that, but he learned how to do some of that. And then when my dad knew how to do, you know, my dad knew it as well. He was treating my mom and dad. And, so then my dad and I were somewhere and he's like, you need to fix this. You know, my dad knew where it was, knew, he told me what to do. And so I picked up and learned how to do it. And so I've got some chiropractic skills, but you know, hips, I can't do the hips. I mean, I could do like back and neck. And I'm sorry, any chiropractors out there, you're probably fainting right now because but anyway, so I'm pretty much aware of, you know, if I'm out, I know where it's at and I know kind of what needs to be done. So go to this new chiropractor. And I said,
yes,
I said, my hips are out of alignment. And he goes, what? I said, I just need my, I said, the rest of me feels fine. I just need my hips adjusted. And so he kind of looked at me like,
yeah,
who are you? Because I'm sure he doesn't get people who come in there and tell him what they need.
That know him. Yeah. No, it's true. And I mean, I would do the same.
Yeah. But yeah, and I knew it, when I would run, I mean, if your hips are out of alignment, your legs are not actually hitting the ground at the same. So one leg's hitting harder when you run, especially one leg's hitting harder because it's maybe, you know, 3/4 of an inch, half inch longer than the other. And the use shows up in your lower back or your hips. And so yeah. And I stretch every day. So I've been able to not have to go to the chiropractor for quite a few years, but this is like, I couldn't get it. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. So you need that initial reset, but the stretching is so, it's so needed. I'm not sure how you feel about stretching as a runner. I've heard a lot of people not like stretching if you're a runner and they're like, oh, it's going to hurt your muscles. I think it does the complete opposite. I think it's the reason I haven't had any injuries with as much as I've like wrecked my body. Mm-hmm. Stretching and the chiropractor just keep up with your health. It could be rocket science, but it's not rocket science. Like you just want to take care of yourself, stretch and just like make sure you do the wellness visits.
So yeah, what stretches do you do?
So I love yoga. For anybody listening who knows yoga, I've kind of started when I had a lot of injuries as a runner, I started Ashtanga yoga, which is literally doing the same sequence over and over and over again until you master that. And they say it takes about an average of 4 years and then you move on to the next sequence. Now I'm a routine person. Like I obviously talk about habits and hacking and stuff. I'm a routine person. So I love the fact that this is a yoga that I could do and I knew what was coming next and I didn't have to do that vinyasa flow where you're like, oh, sometimes it's good for your hips. Sometimes it's not. I don't know. That always bothered me. Maybe that's just my personality, but I loved Ashtanga yoga for the longest time. I mean, I can't even remember the last injury that I had other than something stupid like I rolled my ankle on a rock. That was my own fault.
Or running into a tree in the dark.
I don't have any. That too. But that wasn't like a major injury. I'm talking about like I pulled the gracialis. I think that's how I say it. Gracialis in my leg one time when I first started running and I couldn't run. I had sciatica and I couldn't run. This is me at like 18, 19 years old. I had these issues as a runner. When I started doing yoga, I haven't had any injuries since, other than rolling my ankle and hurting my, that was my own fault though. And then I had a little bit of plantar fasciitis, but I had a massage, my awesome massage therapist fix that with, I think it's, they call it ganache, and they take these like, I don't know what they're called. It's like a piece of plastic. It's better than a piece of plastic, but it's like a piece of plastic and they just rub out and scrape out your muscles. He did that once to me. It's gone. So it's honestly just like identifying what the problem is, stretching, always stretch. I'm a huge advocate for yoga, and then massages are awesome.
Mm-hmm. So do you stretch like before you run, or is stretching part of your normal routine?
Yeah, so I usually stretch after I run. I'm really bad about everything before I run because I kind of want to just start running. I do some warm-ups. Like I'll do some warm-ups that they're like dynamic warm-ups that, you know, swing my legs around, kind of like get my legs going, light jogs back and forth, stepping side to side, stuff like that. I don't really stretch too much other than my hip flexors because those get tight because mm-hmm. I sit a lot or I'm walking. And then I just start running. And I warm up, and that's kind of where I warm up and everything. But when I get home is usually when I do like 20 minutes of yoga. So especially on long run days. So I try to do yoga 5 times a week. And I'm not talking about hours of yoga. I'm talking about 20 minutes of just cooling down and going through a cycle of hip openers. Down dog is my favorite because it opens your back, your chest, your everything on your body it opens. I like pigeon pose for your hips. Things like that where I really target the hips and the muscles mm-hmm. that are running. I'm a huge advocate for that. But it doesn't have to be an hour long class of yoga. It's just 10, 20 minutes after a run.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I started doing three. I do is the child's pose and down dog.
Oh,
and
I love child's pose.
And pigeon. And so, you know, but yes. that all focuses on hips. And so I've been able to run healthy as well. So, yeah. Well, hey, we're coming up on an hour. I try to keep the conversations around Ooh. An hour. Tell people how they can get a hold of you and if they wanted to connect with you.
Yeah. So if you can find me on almost anything but Instagram at Run Thrive Survive, which is my podcast. So you can find my podcast, Run Thrive Survive. Find me on Instagram or Facebook and TikTok at Run Thrive Survive. And if you want to connect with me on Instagram, which I'm on all the time, feel free to message me. It's at the Runpreneur, kind of like entrepreneur, mm-hmm. but Runpreneur on Instagram. And there you'll find just a bunch of fun things that I like to post and a bunch of little hacks about running. So I definitely am over there all the time. That's like my main outlet. So come find me over there.
And my main outlet is Instagram too. So I know that's it's
Instagram's
good.
Awesome. It does everything.
Okay. Well, yeah. And I'll also list your links in the show notes. So if people want to find you, they'll be able to connect with you on that too. Thank you so much, Sierra. I appreciate, awesome. Appreciate the time here. It's been fun talking with you and just appreciate all the insights you've had. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.